Your favorite film is awful.
Hello, and welcome to Your Favorite Film is Awful, the weekly show where we take your favorite films and defend them against negative reviews. As always, I am Luke MJ Powell, and with me is Charlie Lilly.
How are we doing, mate?
And Sean Grimsley.
podcasters there. Made a, rookie mistakes there. Coming in strong out the gate.
I love it. Right, today, as the title suggests, we are doing Gone Girl from, I want to say, 2014.
You are correct. Was it 15?
It was
November 2014, I think.
Okay. Hey, that's because you offered up more detail about when it was released, correct or otherwise, guess who gets to talk about the plot?
Charlie?
No, it's not Charlie.
Oh no, is it you?
No, it's never me.
Who is it?
It's you! Yay!
Who the hell is Hugh?
What?
Sorry, Sean. I'm trying out some new stand-up. It's not going well. Okay, so Gone Girl, directed by David Fincher and written by Gillian Flynn. I've never heard it said, so I don't know. Is a movie starring Ben Affleck and Rosamund Pike. One day, Ben Affleck's character, David Dunn, returns home to find his wife ain't there.
She's gone.
And she is quite literally a girl who is gone. And the police that come to investigate this slowly through a series of evidence and public discourse begin to frame Nick for them. Is it David or Nick Dunn? David Dunn is seven. I don't know what I'm doing there. Having a moment. Nick Dunn. They slowly start to suspect Nick of being responsible for not just her disappearance but her murder. I think that's
okay. And with the knowledge that this is only the first half of the film, and no one's clicking on this episode if they haven't already, so do you want to talk about the second half of the film as well?
Well,
just to remind people.
Spoiler alert: if you haven't seen the movie or read the book, please go and watch the movie first, and then come back for these wonderful tones in your ear from three wonderful dulcet men. The movie kind of plays it as a what happened to her for the first half, and then halfway through the movie splits and you find out exactly what happens to her, or happened to her, or is happening to her. It's not necessarily what you'd expect, and I think all the better for it. Structurally, I'm a massive fan of this film.
Oh yeah, it's phenomenal.
However, in your vague, mysterious nature, you have missed a few things. Such as the feeling in the film, like how it makes you feel, like how you want to express those emotions that are concocted within you. And Stephen Greenwalt, with a half star, I think sums it up perfectly. The first movie to make me crawl out of my skin and make me get up and walk away. Yet it made me its bitch to finish, just so it could throw Ben Affleck's dick at me as some sort of constellation prize.
I mean, what a beautiful starry night, though.
That was funny. That's good.
I think making your skin crawl is a compliment. Yeah. Like, I will say this from the go. I do know people that do not like this film. And their reason for not liking it is always some of the same reasons that I really like it. Like, it's supposed to leave you so uncomfortable and, like, on edge. Like,
and dirty.
And dirty. Like, I actually, strangely, because I, hello, pod YouTubers, whoever you're watching this, F2 movies. The mess behind me is because I'm moving, and I found a book which is about filmmakers, like quotes and stuff, and I found one by David Fincher that really applies to this quite heavily, which is
fantastic.
I don't know how much movies should entertain. To me, I'm always interested in movies that scar. The thing I love about Jaws is the fact that I've never gone swimming in the ocean again.
That's great. That's a really good quote.
And I was like, so when you said the making your skin crawl bit, I'm like, well, Finch achieved what he set out to do then, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I think for me, what's that? There's that. Isn't that a Banksy quote where he says that, like, art comforts the disturbed and disturbs the uncomfortable. Disturbs the comfortable, sorry.
I don't know what you just said, but sure.
I don't know what I just said. you said some words.
They were pretty.
People know what I'm talking about. But yeah, I think it's in. My favorite movies are the movies that disturb me, that make me feel uncomfortable, that make me feel something. And I think this does that to such a degree because it kind of fucks with your head of like. And what I like about this movie is I think it's kind of what we're dealing with right now in terms of society and the problems of things, in terms of everyone takes everything very black and white now, and this movie just shows that things are not black and white. They're grey, and you could have the perfect person, like Amazing Amy is formed out to be in her public presence, but then she isn't really that person. And then someone like Nick Dunn, who doesn't look like, who isn't the best person in the world, could be someone who's innocent. And I think that's what I think's great about this movie, is that you kind of don't know where to stand at the first half. You're kind of like, oh, I feel dirty for kind of like feeling like this guy isn't wrong. But because, like, it's leading all the way to, like, he's really being too casual about this, and he's being a dick about a lot of these things. And the movie's getting you to be like, this guy's a dick. And you're kind of like, but I don't feel like he did it still, you know, from his reactions. And then, but you kind of feel bad for feeling that way. And then, I think it's very important for movies to do that to people.
Hmm. It's a wonderful dissection of the court of public opinion, I think, this movie.
Yes, that's exactly
where and Affleck is so perfectly cast for that.
It's
for me his definitive role. He will never get a job. He will never get a role better than this because his, you know, up until this movie was the performance of his life. His greatest performance was his own life. You know, like, it's just like the way that his whole career has been in the public eye. It's just like, oh, who is he today? Like, what's he doing? Like, he's turning up in a Nike tracksuit. Like, what does that mean? The next day he's Batman. It's like, what like, he's it's like,
and then the J-Lo arc.
The J-Lo arc of his life is like, and who knew that wasn't finished? Like, it's a man. I can't take credit for that quote, by the way. That was Aaron Moran, who you'll remember from the Bo Burnham episode. He said that to me once, and I spat my drink out laughing. It was one of the funniest things I've ever heard. But like, it's such a movie about the public kind of opinion on relationships, and you know, it's a wonderful dissection of what we understand. And this is why I think this movie really works. This is also a movie that is so about making movies. Like, if you are a movie fan,
yes,
the levels of dissection that you can take from this are just unparalleled. From the first shot as well, for me, it just blows my mind. And I think, you know, our narrative understanding of there needing to be a good guy or a bad guy, a good person or a bad person, this movie completely kind of complicates that. And I don't think there's anybody good in this film.
Yeah, it's true.
No. But I also kind of, within reason, understand some of the bad decisions that a lot of people make. Yes. And that, in and of itself, is screenwriting 101. A scene needs tension. 100%. This film has got that in spades.
Yep. I would 100% agree. And to go back to the filmmaking thing you said, I think, for me, this movie taught me, along with The Wolf of Wall Street, that I was looking at CGI the wrong way. Mm. I was looking at green screen the wrong way. Because I can't believe, even watching Gone Girl on rewatch of the podcast and knowing now what is green screen and what isn't, I still am blown away by the effortlessness of the green screen and how you just don't notice it and how Fincher knows exactly where to put it. And he's such a perfectionist. He is the modern day Stanley Kubrick in my eyes, in terms of his approach to filmmaking, being very precise and technically perfect.
I think this is his best movie. I think this is the best movie Alfred Hitchcock never made.
Interesting. I see what you mean. It's
my take on it.
He definitely goes to the school of Hitchcock, Mr. David Fincher.
Oh, massively so.
100%. Which I've realised recently most of my favourite filmmakers did. or do. but yeah, the precision to detail is what makes him so masterful. Like, you're on the edge of your seat with every new reveal because it's the way he's structuring the shots juxtaposing each other or cutting, like, when he's getting... when he's about to kiss Amy in one of the flashbacks, and then it match cuts to him getting swabbed by the police. Like, there's so many incredible transitions like that in that movie that I'm just like, the man is so precise with everything. Yeah, I was just going to say, I think it makes me laugh watching it now. I think it was Aaron Sorkin or Soderbergh. It was someone like that that said that, like, Fincher is like a nightmare to watch a movie with. Because, like, whilst he's watching while you're watching a film with him, he's going, that's like two levels too dark, like over there. like a couple of the tungsten or whatever. Like, he knows all these like detail, and they're like, what? Like, how can you look at movies like that? he's just working on a different level.
I think it was Soderbergh. It was Paul Thomas Anderson.
Oh, was it?
I think it was
I was completely wrong.
Yeah. No, I mean, still a pantheon of greats. I agree with you about a Fincher. Just for me, I got to see this on a preview, like hipster credentials here. And I was really worried for the first minute of the film because I was like, what's going on here? The music and the pace at which the intro sequence is cut together, they don't match at all. And I was like, what is happening? This is supposed to be David Fincher. And by the time I got to the end of the movie and was reflecting on why that left a sour taste in my mouth, I was like, of course, like, it didn't match up because we were seeing it from Nick's perspective. Mm-hmm. And from the storytelling, we're supposed to be positioned with him. And none of what's happening to him matches up. None of the puzzle fits together. And it's like, to purposely make the opening... Well, it's not that opening shot, but it's the next sequence. Yeah. To purposely make that bad, air quotes, that's so brazen to know that you're doing something wrong intentionally. But also, when you do know how to do something well, to mess it up on purpose, that's even harder than getting it right sometimes.
It's the masterstroke.
Oh, honestly, it's just next level. Like, some of my favorite uses of nudity ever in this movie. And just like character positioning, when Nick and Amy are first falling in love, how they face each other when they're having sex, and when just before, like during the middle of the film, he's just like banging her from behind, and they don't look at each other. But by the time you get to the end, they're like washing each other's sins away, but they're not even making love anymore. They'll probably never make love again. Do you know what I mean? It's like, she just uses his seed. He doesn't even need to be there. So it's like, it's just an incredible, incredible, incredible use of just framing, composition, blocking.
And juxtaposition, like you said, for me, I think, I wouldn't necessarily agree with you saying it's like wrong what he does. I think it's because he's juxtaposing things that don't usually go together. For example, like, you're watching kind of like a romance movie at the start, but underneath you're getting like this Trent Reznor score that's really kind of unnerving and like weird and mystical almost. And then whilst that's happening, you'll have scenes where like he'll bump into her at the party. But before he meets her and she's talking about how I met the most amazing guy, she's looking at another guy. And then he comes up from behind and talks to her. And like, there's things like that where it's like, he's setting up things to the language of the film to let you know, like, this isn't going to go
the way
where you think, literally. Yeah, literally.
By the thing, what I was saying about it being wrong is, so the opening shot of her head on his lap is not what I mean. It's the next sequence where he comes
home. In the bar.
It's the opening title sequence. the pacing of the cuts is all wrong to the music. When you watch it, if you watch it again, you'll absolutely see it. It threw me for six the first time I saw it, and then, you know, by the time I'd left the movie, I was, I called you up, didn't I, Charlie?
Yeah, yeah.
I called Matt and Charlie up,
yeah.
like individually, and just be like, it's one of the best movies I've ever seen. Like, you need to see it as soon as possible. I think I saw it 5 times in the cinema on its initial release.
Yeah, I think I saw it about 3 times, I think.
Yeah, and I've seen it, I know I've seen it at 3 or 4 times since.
Yeah, no, definitely same. Yeah. Well, we gave away how much we like this movie, so.
Yeah, so yeah.
In the first review.
You really did.
Yeah, yeah. Guess what's coming at the end.
Very surprising, actually. Wow, okay. I didn't have such a strong reaction, my friend.
Fantastic.
He must have read the book first.
No, I've not. Thankfully, because I think that's where the issue really lies. Especially where you guys were talking about the directorial stuff. About halfway through, I wanted to interject, and then you continued to talk about the, like, complimenting the direction and the plot, and I was like, some of what they're saying, it does make sense, but I do think that this film would have been better if it hadn't been a adaptation of a book. I think if David Fincher had somehow come up with an idea of this style without the relation to the Gone Girl IP, perhaps he could have crafted a better story. I didn't have the same experience as you guys, because from the word go, I didn't think Ben Affleck did it. I was literally, as things were revealing, I was like, "Ah, shit, mate, you're fucked. They're gonna pin you, but you didn't do it. Ah, you're fucked, mate." And then the reveal happened, and I was like, "Ah, cool, okay, this is different." And then after the stuff in the house, Neil Patrick Harris? That's his name, yes?
Yes.
Yeah. Because he's a credited actor on the thing, and he hadn't shown up for such a long, I was like, okay, cool. As soon as he was on screen, I was like, so this guy is going to be a fucking weirdo later. And so all that stuff happened, and I was like, cool, he's a fucking weirdo later. And then how she reacts to that, I was like, oh, that's cool. And then she gets back, and I felt it was a lot of the ending bit was unnecessary. I feel it could have been cut much sooner. I don't feel we needed the whole seed stuff, because it didn't, like, she could just, like, that whole stuff was just, oh, you're caught more in the web, but that was already established when they're in the shower being like, you can't leave, because if you leave, the public's gonna know you left a woman who did who was kidnapped and sacrificed, like, her moral consciousness to come back to you, and you're just gonna leave her? And the public appeal, as you were saying, I feel could have been so much, it could have been so good, but it's not quite there, it's not quite developed enough, but in fairness, it's not the focus of the film. The focus is of the relationship with, Ben and
Rosamund
Pike.
Who was this review by the way? Sorry.
Oh, which review? The one that I... Oh, this is me.
No, I know.
Scrap the reviews. We're just going to have Luke say what he doesn't like. No, we're going to talk about it.
I'll do a review.
Charlie, text me his address. I'm going to go around there right now.
Bring it. You may out-hype me, but I out-weight you. I'll take you
I don't
on.
Know. Do you know what? I don't know. I got weighed the other day and I was stunned.
Oh, okay. Maybe I need to stop talking. but yeah. It's one of those. As you guys revealed your hand of cards, yeah, I felt it only appropriate.
I always think it's the best ones when one of us disagrees, though. So I think it's good to talk this out. I'm very intrigued.
It's good tension. It's good.
Yeah,
tension.
Yeah. I'm good to know. I'm curious to know, because from what you said there, I didn't quite get what you didn't like as much. Because I heard you say, you know, you liked this scene, you thought that was cool. You liked other scenes, cool. Was it all of it put together? Was it the way it was put together? Was you not intrigued? Was you not on the edge of your seat?
Yeah, I wasn't on the edge of my seat.
What?
At all.
Okay.
I just... I feel like because it's a book adaption and the author wrote, like, did the adaption, which is would can be great, but in some case it kind of like handcuffs because they have to stick so closely, and no matter how many of their precious darlings they're killing in the adaption, they're still going to keep some of the, like, especially it's going to be all like the pinpoint scenes, and like the track is going to stay the same. And I feel like if she'd been less involved, that track could have moved more, and David Fincher could have got away with more changes with the script to
but
make.
How do you know that if you haven't read the book?
Oh, because I, because I just know, I just know, well no, I've read reviews. I haven't read the book.
Right.
It's but then.
But reviews don't make the plot.
No, but that's it's one of those. It's. From my experience with David Fincher's other works, with even other adaptions, I've felt they were elevated to like an nth degree. And in this case, this has David Fincher's shine and like his perfect craft, and it's the plot, and it just doesn't. It's not that it doesn't work; it just doesn't work as well. It's the difference between like a door hinge that creaks and a door hinge that closes smoothly, sort of thing. It just.
I can
doesn't
never get enough of your metaphors. Never.
I love it. I was going to talk about gears and stuff. Like,
it's like you like pull them out as well, like, yeah. And they're always, right. Different. They're always different. That's why I'm like, anyway, he's like, okay.
But yeah, I don't know, and that's why.
Well,
I'm
let's
so surprised.
Let's hear the next negative review and see if it can expunge.
Okay,
not expunge. That's the wrong word.
So this is going to be, depending on timing, because we talked a lot longer than I thought we were. This is going to be one of the critic reviews. This is from Bill Clark. It's top and tailed, first paragraph and last two paragraphs. Gone Girl is basically two movies in one. A serious, realistic missing persons boiler, followed by a laughably over-the-top second half that comes dangerously close to unraveling the whole works. The film does not depend upon the audience buying wholesale into the numerous twists, but rather the shifting character motivations and complete nonsensical developments of the third act that accompany the twists. It's a shame, as Gone Girl contains impressive lead performances and is never, ever boring.
I agree with you. It's never, ever boring.
No, it's true.
I can appreciate that this is a movie of two halves.
Definitely.
I absolutely adore the midpoint turn. I think it's fantastic because the movie is one giant, you know, metaphor for the complications of relationships between men and women. And I mean, it may cross genders as well. I don't know. But it's turned up to 11, you know, it's a totally like almost melodramatic, but no, I don't mean that in a negative way, version of these events. It's like the culmination of every small argument every couple has ever had, and then like, okay, let's like turn this up all the way to 11. And for me, I was fully on board with it because it's almost pulpy, but yet somehow by basing it in this kind of like background of a financial crash and you know, just kind of setting it in a version of the American news that I have seen, I fully bought into the I don't know, I never really read it as a boiler. I never really ever, even the first time, was kind of like, did he do, I was never sitting there going, did he do it or not, did he do it or not. I was always waiting for the other shoe to drop, and when it drops, for me, I was just like, this shoe fits better than anything I've ever, like, and I spent the entire movie, you know, like, we're well versed, we watch a lot of movies, we're well versed in structure and knowing where we are in a movie, And I never, there's so much that happens in this that I never was able to fully get ahead of it. You know, like I will sit there watching an M. Night Shyamalan film waiting for something to give me a clue or so. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, I'm not going to lie to you, half the time I might get it right. But it doesn't, this, I'm just like, it's so much richer than just saying, oh, here's the twist.
It's not got about that almost.
It's not, it's almost not about that. Like, I still think it's really fun if you read it on that surface level, but it's about the complications. You know, it's like that you do want to smash the head in of the person you love more than anyone. The people that we hurt the most are the people that we hold closest to us. And this movie explores that to the degree of not family, but sexually, and what how sex and violence coalesce. I can't imagine that Nicholas Winding Refn doesn't love this movie, because it's everything he would ever want out of a film, except there's very little neon. You know, and I have subsequently read the book, and it's like, it's one of the reasons why I think that it's such a great adaptation, because what Fincher and Flynn did cut together made the film a much richer text than the book for me. So, like, the book opens with Nick Dunn, and you're told the morning that she disappears that he sat at the beach reading the newspaper. So you know when you're reading the book that he didn't do it. But in the film, you don't know where he's coming back from when he arrives back that early in the morning. We subsequently find out it was him having an affair with Emily Radziechowska. I don't actually know how to pronounce her surname. I've never heard it said. But at the time, it only adds to the film's ability to kind of like throw you off the scent. And... For me, I don't know if this is my favourite. I don't think it's David Fincher's best film, but I think it might be my favourite David Fincher film. Like, I see. And you know, for all of the reasons that you were like you were stating for yourself, Luke, I just simply cannot see around that wall. I like a completely different headspaces at all. I think this is one of my having read the book as well, I think this is one of the best adapted scripts I've ever read.
I heard that from a friend at the time when it came out, because he'd read the book before, and he was like, the adaptation's amazing because it's a great movie as well as the book being its own thing. He was like, I would almost go and read the book as well, because it's like they're two separate experiences, even though they still follow very similar beats and stuff. And I was like, okay, I need to check that out. I think I agree with what you were saying, Sean, about the way it's kind of like a metaphor for relationships and marriages whilst also being that. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, obviously it's not literal. It's literal at times, and then sometimes it's metaphorical in terms of the feelings of being in that a relationship that is taking a downturn. And I think that's the masterstrokes of this for me, because it's like it's like a noir movie in a sense, because you have, you know, the lighting's very noir. It's very low lit. It's got that kind of mystery element to it. It's got the femme fatale, the blonde femme fatale that's screwing over the protagonist guy. You know, it's got a lot of noir tropes, even though it's a film that on the surface is like just a normal kind of, I don't know, what would you call it? Like a thriller of...
I suppose in the strictest of senses, it's a thriller, yeah.
Yes, and I like that it takes attention to detail, like you said, to like the little things, the little subtleties of seeing their relationship fall apart by their positioning, by their movements, the way they're sort of around, their body language around each other, and all these little things, as well as this big, obviously, giant story that's going on that's also telling you that. And I think that's what's the masterstrokes of the film for me. And that's why I find it difficult to wrap my head around, Luke, why you
to
clarify, kind of enjoyed that. Yeah, yeah.
To clarify, because I feel there may have been a slight miscommunication.
Okay.
When I said I was surprised and all and such, it was how much you liked it. Not
I see.
That you liked
not that you liked it. I see.
I like
you understand.
It.
Okay, right,
I like
okay.
It. It's, like,
I see.
It's one of those that, in our monochromatic scale, depending on if these reviews change our minds, listener, for me, it sits on the awesome side in that monochromatic scale. If there was a bigger scale, it wouldn't sit at the end of that scale, if that makes sense. It would sit closer to a midpoint, maybe even a like a 7-8 out of 10 sort of area. So I like it, and for a lot of for the same reasons you guys, because it is well shot, and a lot of those like twists and the beats. It's the weird one where I liked the story, but the story could have been. I felt the story could have been better, which is the type of review that we read and go, oh, fuck you, but I'm currently experiencing.
I just don't know how you could make this story better. Like, for me, that this is the only missing person's story, and there are lots of them, where you want both the missing person and the person looking for them. You don't like either of them.
Yeah, that's
and,
true.
But you want to see what happens. That is the very essence of why we watch Jeremy Kyle and Jerry Springer. Like, it's yeah. so, it's such a perfect distillation of, like, 90s trash television for me. That, which is, you know, being that little bit older than you, was, like, seeped into my consciousness from the age of about 6 years old. That I just felt like I was watching, like, something completely fresh and something completely new. Yeah, it's, for me, it's up there as one of my favourite films of all time.
But going off that, Sean, do you think the reason it might be because of, like, all the murder mysteries and, like, cold cases and stuff that's kind of become prevalent in today's society? Like, you can't throw a stone these days without hitting at least somebody that has been listening to true crimes podcast or watched 7 Netflix seasons on, hey, this family was perfect until it wasn't, sort of thing. So do you think that may have, like, that might be why I don't like it as much as you guys, because I've experienced it after all of these documentary narratives that paint the picture. Oh, fuck, that might actually be it. This is just the cinematic version of one of those documentaries that Netflix has forced into my eyes.
But you say that, we say this a lot. It's really, like, a film's critical weight can always be measured by when it came out. Like, you have to really look at definitely. It in the Jesus of the period to be able to appreciate it. You know, it's why, it's why, you know, something like Jaws is still so timeless, because it kind of, like, even though it changed everything then, it nothing really about that film would change massively even if it was set today. Like, I know we'd have better radar tracking and stuff like that, but the core principles of that film could still
be a CGI shark.
Yeah, whereas it's like, I can totally appreciate it. But when I saw this film, it was, you know, things like Serial were, it was around the same kind of time that was coming up. And now, you know, because of the proliferation of streaming and things like that, there's so many. A teen girl has gone missing in the forest. Establishing drone shot over the forest. You know, it's like and then especially after Making a Murderer, which was a cultural phenomenon. I had never really, for me, it works more like a Jerry Springer thing. I see it in a very Jerry Springer kind of a way. And I've never considered it in that viewpoint that you've just had of looking at it as a Making a Murderer thing. And just thinking about it now, for me, I'm like, film makes film better. Makes film even better for me. Like, it's not making it worse. I'm like, there are even more layers of this wonderfully, wonderful onion. Let me cry.
I love the thought of we're watching, like, it's this masterstroke of filmmaking. And Luke's like, I saw that on BuzzFeed Unsolved. What are you talking about?
I mean, you're not wrong.
You won't believe where this woman was hiding.
Yeah. Everyone thought she was dead. Turns out, she might not be.
You'll never look at a wine bottle the same.
Oh, no, you will not. Anyway, let's continue the review, because we got massively off course.
We did.
You've got my brain wandering, I'm sorry. You've got my brain wandering about the context of people watching these true crime things and being like, these mid-budget thriller movies are not, you know, they're not quite keeping up to it, because we're getting so many crime thrillers that are real. That's interesting. That's something interesting I'm going to think about. But yeah, carry on.
Okay, so as I said before, this is going to be the last two paragraphs. I'll pause in the middle. I completely forgot to mention, this whole critical review has a grade of C. So Gone Girl has a C grade.
I see.
Considering the impressive directorial canon of David Fincher, Gone Girl has to rank in the bottom third. Though competently shot, Fincher never builds the suspense that the story, particularly the first hour, deserves. It's much more procedural, with the colour palette dark as ever and the pacing deliberate. The cast, led by Ben Affleck and Rosamund Pike, is superb. Affleck can play indifferent with the best of them, and he does so effectively here. But it's Pike completely immersing herself in the role that really shines. She shows incredible range as the defeated Amy and could be in awards contentions come 2015. Tyler Perry and Carrie Coon are excellent in supporting roles, while Neil Patrick Harris is miscast as an old flame of Amy's.
I mean, that review sounded like it liked the film. You know, it didn't sound that derogatory. It is a career-making term for Rosamund Pike. It's an incredible performance, and it's I think what's most interesting about it is that there's so few sociopathic women shown on screen, because, you know, statistically women are less likely to be sociopaths. So it's you know, from a storytelling perspective, it seems fairly fresh. I think Affleck is so good in this role. I genuinely don't know who else could do it. I don't disagree about the Neil Patrick Harris thing, though. Is something where I'm always... it's one of those suspensions of disbelief thing as well. It's just like, at the time that was, he was fully Barney Stinson. So, like, for me, like, that's how I understood him. I was like, I can't see him as anything other than this, like, Lothario. Yeah. And him being this kind of, like... I don't know, cuck loser. It didn't land. I couldn't separate the two. Mm. And yeah,
I almost would have swapped Scoot McNairy with him.
Yes,
almost.
Yes,
I feel like that would have, played a bit better.
Do you think he did it because it's that whole?
Good.
Yeah. Do you think it's that whole? I don't want to say trope, but like, it's an element that's happened quite a few times where a comedy actor or somebody that's only known for comedy will do a creepier role so that it, like, diversifies their pool.
So the audience sees them differently.
Yeah.
The
only one that can pop in my brain is, like, a Robin Williams doing One Hour Photo, where it's sure. like, hey, this funny, funny, haha guy doing a very serious thing.
Or Adam Sandler.
Yes.
Michael Jones.
Yeah,
or...
I think it could be a case of that, but at the same time, it's one of the few times where I think David Fincher got it wrong. I don't think he ruins the movie in any way, but yeah. I do agree with that review that I don't think he's everybody else in this film shines so brightly. Like, yes. no one's let, like, even Patrick Fugit, like, he doesn't have a lot to do. It's the assistant to the main cop, one of the two cops. The kid from Almost Famous, but grown up. He has some wonderful scenes. So no one, I don't feel like anybody falls by the wayside, but there is something about Neil Patrick Harris where just he never quite sits right. And Finch is spot on normally, like, with every aspect of its film. But you never know. There might have been, and this happens a lot as well, there could have been some way that he was tied to being in the film regardless of what happened. It could have been something to do with the contract. You know, whoever is Gillian Flynn's agent is also Neil Patrick Harris's agent. And it's like, if you want to do this movie, he comes with it. That happens. That does happen.
It's true.
I mean, on some level, the fact that you have this reaction to Neil Patrick Harris being like, oh, that's odd, I'm not sure how I feel about that, kind of lends itself to the character that he's playing, where it's like, oh, I'm not quite sure how I should feel about this guy.
Yeah, that's true. It's true.
It's a deeply layered onion. Yeah.
I wanted to jump on the... you said that this hits the bottom third of Fincher's filmography, which to me is like... It's still better than, like... David Ayer's best movie. Do you know what I mean? Like, even though, like, I like End of Watch, Training Day is also great, but, you know, I don't, you know, there's levels to this shit, you know? And I just feel, and it's funny to say that as a sort of A drogue.
No, it's true. It's a very strange relative comparison, that scale, isn't it?
Yes, literally. It's like his worst movies, in my opinion, Fincher's worst movies are Alien 3, which, you know, wasn't really him.
Yeah, and
The Game, but that's not, it's still great. You know,
I still, love The Game.
It's still great. I still have a great time with it. But it's like in comparison.
But I think that's also why I love Gone Girl as a piece of Fincher's work as well, because like everything about The Game I love, but it's not quite executed that well.
That's
and
true.
I feel like going heavy on some crazy outside their twists, he kind of got to, like, he did it again in this one, and it really sticks, it sticks the landing far better.
It's like you learn from that almost.
But I love The Game so much.
I enjoy The Game.
Is The Game the one where his brother gives him the invite?
Try not to ruin just in case we haven't seen it.
It's Michael Douglas and Sean Penn.
Yes, okay, cool. I know this one. I've
that's
seen
a
this one.
That's a movie kind of two halves.
Yeah.
But the second half happens right at the end.
I love that movie until that. But I still kind of dig it, but I'm like, it's just a bit of a jump. But we'll do that one day. We'll do that one day.
I love
one
it
day,
so much maybe. As an idea.
Yeah, sweet.
Gone Girl is a strange case study. It's enveloping and hypnotic, even while towing the line of coming apart at the seams. It's undoubtedly a glossed-up version of a potboiler novel, but cannot be quite as easily dismissed thanks to Pike's performance and a engrossing setup. It's just unfortunate that it falls prey to gradually making each character a little bit dumber to progress the narrative. Oh, rude.
A little bit dumber.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they mean by that. I'm not sure what... I actually think that every single character learns something on this journey about themselves, almost.
Yes.
And... You know, I think the very structure of this film, its very purpose, is to talk about, you know, the discourse of society choosing its heroes and its villains, based on gender, and I think all of the characters in this movie question what that means to them, in a way that they feel alive. To me, like I could totally be happy with a spin-off of Tyler Perry's character doing an entirely different movie, because he feels so alive in this movie to me.
That is true.
I feel, in the terms of characters being dumber than expected, for me there are two cases that I felt and shouted at the TV about, which were when Nick decided not to reveal the third clue, the whole the one that's in his father's house, and it's just like, oh, I'm gonna pocket this and I'm not gonna tell the police, which I was just like, what do you gain from this? And even like after the reveal, and like after the fact that he is innocent, he's just a fucking idiot. He's just a lazy idiot. That is his character traits. And I was like, what? And then the second one was when the lady that he's having an affair with just rocked up at their house. And I was like, are you a fucking idiot? Are you an idiot?
Yes, she is, though. That's the point. I think with that one, that is 100% the point.
It's 100% the point. And then Nick being a fucking idiot again and being like, oh, yeah, let's have sex. And I'll definitely call you every day and I'll message you every day. And I'm like, you're the prime suspect of a murder investigation, and you want to hide this affair by contacting this person every day? And so those were like two
tension,
examples.
Great tension. But that's the thing. Characters making bad choices is what drives things forward.
Does he definitively do that? Because I could also see him doing that as like a just get out, kind of, I'll message you every day. Because I can't remember if he does do it or not.
I think we're not told about anything, and then the next time we hear about that character it's when she's gone silent on him and she's just like, oh, I'm not sure. And then she rocks up on TV being like, hey, so I was having an affair. I feel bad. He might have done it. And then he goes on TV and being like, I was an idiot. I had an affair. I didn't do it. Please believe me.
Yeah. But that's the thing. That's why I think the film is such a rich text, because the principles of that, and for me anyway, he was never going to leave Amy to be with her, but she was just someone that was attainable to him during that time. And it's to do with complacency and not recognizing that there might be something wrong in your relationship, I mean, between Nick and Amy, but not knowing what to do about it. You know, like, we've all broken up with people and we've all known many, many months before it's happened that it's going to happen, but we don't want to admit it to ourselves.
Yeah, it's true.
And, you know, Nick Dunn is that personified. It's a very male trait as well. You know, it's. I think that's why the film is so good. Of course he didn't want to tell him about that affair, because it just makes him look more guilty.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He even said as well that he was sleeping with her whilst, like, he was hoping to have a baby with Amy, and he says, like, he's like, I would have, like, dropped everything for that. Like, that a year ago, that would have been the best thing that could have happened. And I think that's
that's the end of the film. What does he drop? His entire reasoning, do you know what I mean? Literally. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But then, like, at the end, he's not dropping anything. It's less he took food off his plate and more Rosamund Pike's character picked up the plate and just threw it a mile away, being like, you have no options now. You're fucked. You're with
But it's also kind of a metaphor for the sense that he knows that things are going badly in the relationship. It's easier for people and for him to stay in that relationship and ignore the issues, as opposed to breaking up, because it's hard to break up with someone, to lose someone, as it is hard for him to go back and everyone in the street treat him like he's a horrible person, like someone might do if you broke up with someone lovely for no reason or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, your friends might be like, oh, why'd you do that? Or, you know, you look like the bad guy. And I think that's kind of what it's going for with that ending. Would you agree, Sean?
Yeah, because it's not just, by the time the movie gets to its end, all of everything that's happened means that he's not just staying in that relationship. Like, he can't be complacent. He almost doesn't have a choice to leave that relationship in the end. If it's not by the public discourse of leaving someone that was a victim of sexual assault, it's from the, which he was, you know, like a murderer. It's from the, it's from his own, like, moral standpoint of, that's his kid. Like, he is, like, but it's the perfect ending to that movie, because regardless of anything else that's gone on, they had a kid to save the marriage. Like, that's the ending of the movie. Like,
that happens a lot.
It happens a lot, but it's sociopathic. Yeah, it doesn't make, it's so selfish, and it's almost lazy as well. It's just as lazy, but she's got that figured out. The puzzle piece of it all. It saddens me to say, but I think I love this movie so much because I can, there's aspects to both of those characters talking about what happens in relationships. Like, I can relate, especially to him. I can so relate to that character. Like, he feels so tangibly real to me. I feel like I know that guy.
Yes, it does feel like you know that person, doesn't it?
You know, he is very much like the personification of the patriarchy.
Yeah, it's true. And I think that's what's good about her side of the story, is that that side of the story is about that. Her side of the story is her saying, like, you know, guys, they want to have the cool girl that does everything for them and, you know, it keeps a smile on their face and never gets angry. And that half of the movie is kind of the fuck you. It's the other side to that, the patriarchy, and to that side of what a lot of problems are in relationships, particularly with men, is because they expect and they have such a sort of standard from the movies they consume or the porn they watch, that they expect something like an imaginary thing from their women. And, you know, her side of it is her kind of, in her mind anyway, confronting that and like fighting back against that.
I feel on some level it's less fighting and more just swapping the roles, because of course by the end of the film, he's the one who has to pretend to be the cool guy who's okay with all of this horrific things.
I don't agree with her methods, but I totally am on board with her argument.
Yes, yeah, that's what's interesting about it.
But I do agree with her methods, because it made for a fantastic
movie. I prefer
great movie.
Happy relationships where people are honest and truthful with each other.
We're all going to die alone.
Scientifically, yes. Scientifically, you have never touched another person in your life.
That's true.
Okay, so this next one is going to be from Carl Langs. It's another half star. I have no words to describe how aggressive this movie made me. Like, I wanted to commit murder or kill myself because of how long and horrible it was. I couldn't even stand one single person in this movie. Only the cat, which deserved more screen time than Ben Affleck.
I think you're supposed to kind of not like them.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, great work for the film there.
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
Great work for the film.
As Fincher famously said, you know, people are perverts. And we like to watch bad people do bad things. People are perverts.
Did the sister do anything bad? I feel like the sister.
Yeah, the sister. That is true. Sister's probably the only one that's decent out of everyone.
But she sees. I almost feel like she's the vessel for the audience to kind of go, like, he didn't do it as well.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she exists. She almost exists as the moral reason in the movie. Like, she's the. She is the person that kind of. Yeah, I've said she's the moral reason. Everybody knows what that means.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And on Battle some element, isn't it? Isn't the saying, like, for evil to win, good men just have to do nothing?
Yeah.
So by her knowing that he's having an affair and knowing all these additional facts without all of the context, but not providing that to the police, still like paints her as a villain because she acted as a bystander instead of a hero, sort of thing.
Well, it just means that everybody's got something to do in this movie, that everybody plays a pivotal role. And that's that for me suggests that you've written a pretty good story.
Yeah.
Pretty good script.
I agree. 100%.
I mean, pretty good characters. How they're utilized could be different. Anyway, right, okay. Oh god. We're done. That's
we're done?
Two reviews. We've been talking a long time.
We have. Great movie,
I feel like I feel like where we could have done another review, we just argued about whether or not it was good.
Yep.
So as the title suggests, the title we must now answer is Gone Girl awful?
Absolutely not. It's one of the most awesome films that has ever been done on the podcast and ever made. Agree, Charlie.
I would agree.
You would? Or you do?
I do.
Going to?
What's the right word to use?
What are you going to do, Charles?
Yeah, no, I would 100% agree. I think it's a fantastic movie. I think that it is in my top three Fincher films, and I can't and they could flip-flop depending on what mood I'm on. If you want to know what that is, Seven, Fight Club, and Gone Girl. I think it's a great movie. It's a great thriller. It's a movie and type of films that we don't get as much now, so it's nice to go back and watch this. It's also one of the best films of 2014, which was a great year for movies, and an absolute blast. So awesome.
I love having you guys, because you can just like, oh yeah, these films of 2014, this is the ranking, and I'm like, did this come out last year or 10 years ago? When did this come out? It's awesome. As it was one of those, I tried to dress it up as if the reviews were going to change our minds, even though I read all of the reviews
before
to pick them so that they could be, so already they've changed my views. Because I came out of the film being like, yeah, that was pretty good. And then I read all the reviews and went, oh yeah, it's good. It lost the pretty. What do you double bill with?
I would double bill this with a movie by Neil LaBute called In the Company of Men. 1997, Aaron Eckhart and Matt Malloy. an incredible film. Was a stage play. It's really undervalued, underseen little gem. Massive, massive fan of it. It's about Aaron Eckhart plays two business guys. Aaron Eckhart is like a sworn misogynist, and the other guy, played by Matt Malloy, is kind of like quite emotionally hurt by a previous relationship and frustrated by their lives with women. And so they set out to seek revenge on women. And the premise to the movie, I won't tell you any more about what happens. It's not violent. I will say that. It's not a violent film, but it's a horrible film. The premise of the movie was based on the idea of let's hurt someone.
Interesting.
That's a nice premise.
What's that called, Sean?
In the Company of Men. It's directed by Neil LeBute, and it's from 1997.
Sounds cool. Sounds cool. I'll check that out.
Charles?
I think I'm going to stick with my like noir vibes, my film noir vibes, and I'm going to go with one of the first film noir movies directed by my boy Billy Wilder, Double Indemnity, because I think it's a... I think you've got the kind of the femme fatale playing the protagonist male who's a bit...
Mm.
He's a bit of a dirtbag himself, and I think, I think that would be a fun little double bill. What do you think? Do you think I nailed that one, Sean? I know it's different.
I'm vibing it. I think you could do that. It's reminded me, I haven't seen Double Indemnity in about 12, when did I graduate uni? 12 years ago. So,
if you want to borrow the Blu-ray, you know
I
mean.
I think I own it. I stole it from the university library. Luke?
Fair. I am going to go with I Care a Lot.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
I just feel Rosamund Pike killing it in both films, being a boss-ass bitch.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Big fan of her doing that. Right? Yeah, I literally can't. I really enjoyed that movie, too. I think she's got a real niche in playing strong but socially misaligned women. I'm a big fan of hers. I'm a big fan of her. She deserved all the recognition for those.
Definitely.
And spoiler alert, I think I had similar issues with that film as I had with this one.
Yeah.
That's fine.
So,
not enough cat. Not enough cat.
Not enough cat. All of the cats should be there. Cool. I think we've done very nicely there. I think we've spoken quite a lot. We've given a range of ideas and many, many hypotheticals. No, that wasn't the word I was looking for, but I don't care anymore. It's done.
Yep.
And I'm tired. I'm tired, listener. I'm tired, so I'm going to go to
I've
bed.
I've got a shoot.
What's the things that we do at the end? Oh, yeah, of course. Sean, thank you for coming yet again. It has been our pleasure. Could you tell us, are you still busy? Where can people find you? May still be busy.
Who's this Sean guy, man? I'm the dude. His dudeness, El Duderino. The things you find when you're moving home. You can find me at www.seangrimsleyfilms.com or sgrimsleyfilms.com. Both of them work. I paid for both domains. I'm a freelance camera operator, lighting cameraman, editor, motion graphics, and live streamer. So please get in touch if you need anything done. And if you don't. And check out boy Full Fat as well. Charlie's on the podcast there. And always support those guys. They're doing fantastic stuff, always entertaining. If you like this podcast, what's wrong with you? But also, if you like this podcast, please check out this.
What is all this backhanded compliments?
I'm trying to make the people laugh.
Charles.
Right, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Patreon, YouTube, the lot on Your Favourite Film Is Awful, and you can find us on Twitter at FabFilmIsAwful.
Exactly. Pleasure as always, guys. Listener, I hope you've had a fun ride. Viewer, I hope that you've enjoyed the visuals. Otherwise, bye-bye. Have a good one. See you later.
Ta-ta.